Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Uplifting Communities Talk Show. And we have a really good show for you guys this afternoon. And I mean, this is going to be really good. Okay, but before I go on any farther, I would like to turn it over to Mr. J. Love. Mr. J. Love, go for it.
Hey. Hello, everyone. This is Jamar Turner, also known as J. Love. I'm so happy to be with you this evening. We have an exciting show planned with two incredible gentlemen. I'm going to let Mr. Maya Gaines go ahead and introduce them, but it's so nice to be with you tonight. Mr. Maya Gaines?
Well, thank you for that intro, J. Love. Welcome to Uplifting Communities Talk Show, everyone. My name is Tamaya Gaines, and today is October 20th, 2020. On March 6, 1857, during the Dred Scott decision, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the U.S. Constitution was not meant to include American citizenship for black people, regardless whether they were enslaved or free, and so the rights and privileges that the Constitution confers upon American citizens could not apply to them. The 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution abolished slavery and involuntary servitude on January 31, 1865, except as punishment for a crime. Even a Nixon advisor, John E., admitted, and I quote, "The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. You understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or black, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities, we could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did they know they were lying about the drugs? Of course they did. Even Malcolm X reminded us that we were not brought here to the United States to be made citizens. So where does that leave Black America? How does Black America penetrate this exhibit of generational oppression? Today's guests were not only criminalized, but they have firsthand experience about condemnation, rehabilitation, redemption, and triumph. Please help me welcome today's guests, Mr. Keith Lee, independent filmmaker, and Mr. Marcus McDaniel, business owner.
Yay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Well, that was a dry welcome.
I feel like we need to have an
applause or something going on in the background. Come on, you guys.
All right.
Better
all right.
than that, right?
Yeah, all right.
That was awesome.
Okay, well, let's start with Mr. Keith Lee. Okay. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to go to Mr. Marcus McDaniel. Okay. And that's how we're going to start the show off. Go ahead, Mr. Keith.
Okay. My name is Keith Lee. I'm an independent filmmaker from Stockton, California. I've made three independent feature films. Two went to Amazon, and right now one is just in circulation right now. But I've been in the industry for over 15 years on the independent ground, guerrilla filmmaking, grinding, and putting in different work. I lived in Hollywood and traveled many places, did film festivals, and just now getting my company up and running and have our first film series up on Amazon right now.
All right.
Wow.
Do you want me to tell you how I started, or just we'll get into that?
Yeah. Mr. Marcus.
With me now? Well,
yeah.
I started my business in 2013, Mudville Mix Enterprises LLC is really a funny story about how I had to even go about organizing my business, and it has a lot to do with the American justice system and the topic that we are involved in today. But I'm a local food vendor. I'm also in business with a couple of partners that we have a barbecue restaurant in Stockton, California. I've been cooking for a long time, but I've been cooking for financial gain for, what is it, 7 years now? I really enjoy what I do, and I think putting food in front of a crowd to bring even the worst of enemies to the sitting table to have a nice conversation. So I hope to continue doing this and maybe serve somebody else out there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay, Keith, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
What made you get into Femin?
Well, it was probably like over maybe 20 years ago. I used to, I'm from Stockton, from the east side of Stockton. And what happened was I was out here active. I was real active in the streets, running with gang members, running with Crips. I was real, real active. And my brother had got killed. And when my brother had got killed, he had got murdered, got shot, and got killed. And so I was kind of like through with the game after that, not knowing which direction to go. So my mom and them had moved to San Francisco at the time. So I went up there with them for left Stockton to go stay with them at the time. And then at the time I was watching TV, and they had a guy by the name of Matty Rich. He had did a movie called Straight Out of Brooklyn. And I was sitting there watching it and thought to myself that I could tell my own important stories from, you know, about Stockton or just stuff that I had been through. So I told my mom about it. She said, why don't you just go ahead and try and do it then? So I went to the library. I didn't have a library card, so I would steal books, take the books back after I read them just so the other people could still get the books. I wouldn't keep them. I'd just take them back after I read them. So after I read the books, I figured that I still need a little bit more help because I went out and I was in Fillmore District in San Francisco, and I was running into different organizations, and I was telling them that I wanted to make a movie, and they was telling me, where's the script? But I had read all the books, but I didn't have the script. So I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off trying to make this happen without the script. So I had to go back. Went to San Francisco City College, learned script writing, but I had already read the books on script writing, but I wanted to go brushing up my skills. So I went to City College San Francisco, learned that I had already learned my skills, ended up with like the A in the class, and they encouraged me to keep going. So I went independent and started asking people how to get jobs and stuff. So I started interning all around San Francisco on a Mike Myers, how to get Axe Murderer, Panthers interned on. So I worked on Spice Ones videos, Sully Sales videos. I worked on a lot of independent videos, learning from the grassroots up, working from free first interning just so I could learn my skills until I got a paid position to be on sets as a PA. And that's right after intern to get you a PA, production assistant. So I learned that. And then from there, my whole time in my mind, when my dream was to make my own movie, so I would always watch the directors and stuff. And I had met a guy by the name of Marty Jones, and he's up in Austin right now working for a film company. But Marty Jones had knew some friends of mine, which the name was Armand Garrett, Regina Garrett, and Otis Best. And they were the only black people in San Francisco at the time who was connected with unions. So they started a group called Brotherhood, and I was in a group called Brotherhood, which was only all black filmmakers, and we were just trying to get jobs out there that way. And I would ask Marty for the treatments of the film, of the videos we were working on. We were working on MC Hammer videos, Pumps and the Bumps 1, Pumps and the Bump 2, and he would give me the treatments of the videos. So I started learning that way how to write videos. And then after that, after I got my confidence up and stuff, I went out and wrote my own movie script, and I met a guy in Sacramento by the name of Black Market Records in Sacramento. I hooked up with them and produced my first movie, which was called Greedy. So I made my first movie independent in Sacramento called Greedy. And we traveled with that. We did the Hollywood Black Film Festival, San Francisco Black Film Festival. I went to Cannes, France for 10 days with that movie. I traveled all around with that movie and I won some awards, but I had to come back. And after that, the situation didn't work out with me and the company. The situation just wasn't good for my health or me or period or my future at the time. So I had to get stopped with that company and then start my own company. And then that's where I had to redeem myself and all the knowledge that I knew and everything that I went through. I had to put that to a test and see if I was able to accomplish my own next movie by myself. So I made a graffiti writing, a tagging movie in Stockton. And I ended up meeting some people, and they helped me get that movie on Amazon. So I had my first graffiti movie on Amazon. So after that, so I ended up doing this. My last movie right now that I did right now is independent by my own camera, by my own stuff. And the same people that I was dealing with in Hollywood, I talked to them again, and they helped me out and got my movie back on Amazon. So I have a joint venture independent deal with Amazon to where they take their cut and I take my cut. But it's not like they give me money or anything. So everything I put up front, but I have keep all my copyrights and I keep everything to myself. So it's just a joint venture deal, which works out better for me. But in the future, if we can get a production deal, I'd definitely take a production deal. But right now, we're just strictly independent right now. And that's how I basically really got started.
Is that your movie, American, that's on Amazon Prime right now?
Yes, The West Coast and American Dream. It's on Amazon.com right now. It's just the first episode to the series because right when we had finished up this last episode, the first episode, the pandemic hit, so we wasn't able to film this past summer or any other episodes. We're just now gearing up to start back filming in a couple of weeks from now. We're getting everything. We're in pre-production now, had a script ready, and everything's getting ready right now. We're going to start the casting. But, yeah, that's it, The West Coast and American Dream. That's the first episode.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Were saying something. I don't want to dig off in your business, but it kind of piqued my interest. You were saying something about you had to leave a company. It wasn't good for your health. I just wanted to know if you could expound on that.
Okay. Sometimes you wish for a situation, and this entertainment business, I call it the wait and go game. Sometimes you go, you wait, you wait, go, and you have to really, like, can't be happy-go-lucky just because a deal comes along. Sometimes you have to be strong enough to say no. But if you need it, then you might have to take it. But in this situation, I was dealing with the company and out of Sacramento, Black Market Records, and we didn't have – there was no contracts. There was no contracts or anything else like that. And everything, I wrote the story, but it was their idea. I wrote the story. I came in, and I directed it. But halfway through it, I started hearing about different things, how about you're not going to get paid and different stuff. And it takes a toll on your mental and your spiritual health because you still have to know that you still have to complete the project. Because if you don't complete the project, then you don't have nothing to show nobody. So it becomes a money thing, or do you want to complete your project thing? So I had to take one on the chin and just make sure that I had got the project out and make sure that they was going to finish up putting the money for, even though I knew I wasn't going to get paid after the movie was done, to make sure that they was going to put up the budget and finish the budget for the movie. So I had to suck it up and because they had directed by me and directed by another person on the poster. They were doing anything they wanted to when you don't have contracts. So there was a whole learning lesson for me about that. And it really the mental game, because you want the money to be able to make another movie, but if the company doesn't give it to you, then you have to really have your spirits up high to go back out there and make another movie, because everything's not going to be what you think it's going to be.
Now, are your stories based on true characters, or are all these fictional characters?
They're basically on reality. Yes, they're real characters. They're not real characters, but yeah. Sometimes your name is like these things. Right, yeah. Yeah, I just keep trying to keep everything in reality. That's like the style that I like is realism.
Right.
And Mr. I understand that there's basically between 5 to 6 phases to film production. There's the development, there's funding, pre-production, production, post-production, and, of course, distribution. How many of those phases of the film production are you personally managing right now?
All of them.
All of them?
Every stage there is, except for the distribution comes through Amazon, so they put it on their site, but all the promotions and stuff we do, they might do a little promotion, but everything else is all in-house. So everything from pre-production to editing to all the way, pre-production and post-production, we do it all. Our company does it all. So, we're having everything right now.
I have to ask this question because in my past life, actually my current life, I do some lending, right? And I actually had a group reach out to me about some venture capitalist financing for a movie deal many moons ago. How did you secure funding for your project? Because that's typically one of the biggest hurdles most independent filmmakers have to get over. But here you are, you have like 3 projects out and in circulation. So how did you find the funding? I know you said the Black Capital Records assisted you with one of them, but what about the other projects?
Black Market Records. Black Market Records out of Sacramento. My other projects are self funding. You have to save up for a year. You can't really like play around. There's no buying shoes, no dressing up. There's no playing. You have to take your craft career seriously, because it's one thing to be able to finish your project, but the next thing is you still have to have money for your promotions. People forget about promotions, and people forget about how to get a deal, because the deals aren't going to be sometimes well. The deals aren't going to be in your town. You might have to go to a film festival, or you might have to take a sheet. And if you're a filmmaker and you want to get your funding, then maybe you have to write down a name like Bill Duke or Spike Lee or let me see who else, Russell Simmons. These are just names, but they're actually hits. So if you're going to know that they're going to be speaking at a seminar in L.A., you're going to have that money to fly there or drive there and book a hotel and stay the night. So that's all goes into your production and everything that you're trying to do, because that's going to help you go out there and ask these people for a movie deal. Because one time after I finished my first movie, Greedy, I knew that they didn't give me no money. But I saved some money, and this was during they had the Source Awards. So I saved my money. Mm-hmm. I caught a bus from here to L.A., caught the plane from L.A. to South Beach in Florida, and I went by myself, and I got a hotel, and I didn't know I got a Hotel 6, but the Hotel 6 was on South, I was on the beach right there, so it was a nice mm-hmm. hotel. So but I had some hits on there. There was a guy by the name of Kevin Lyle. He worked for Def Jams and Russell Simmons, and I was that's who the names I had down on the paper. So I went specifically really to there to go meet them. And when I got there, that was my main mission, trying to meet them. So I ended up meeting Russell Simmons and gave me his phone number and stuff. And we were in contact. But what happened was he wanted to buy the first movie, Greedy, from me, but I didn't own the movie. So I tried to get him in touch with the owner of the movie for them to buy it from him. But they didn't want to sell the movie because there was no internet at the time. And this was over like 15 years ago. So he wanted to keep his movie and put out the hard copies itself. So we ended up doing it that way. Well, they did it that way and put it out on Amazon, all mm-hmm. hard copies, and sold it that way in the soundtrack. But you really have to make your hits and know who you want to go talk to, because it's like anything else. If you were, I guess it's like if you were building a house, you got to know certain lenders that if you're trying, well, to give you a loan to help you build the house. And with me, you got to know specific companies like Ava DuVernay has Array. You'd have to know who works at Array in order to go talk to them to see who can get you to Ava DuVernay. It's like different steps that you have to take in different levels, but you have to be prepared, because if you're not prepared and you don't have a movie script to take them, or you don't have a reel, or you don't even have a movie that you did, then you can't even go talk to them, these people. So you should always be prepared first, because going to ask them for the money is kind of easy, because every time you ask them, will you listen and will you watch my movie, or will you give me a movie deal, you're asking these people, will you give me millions of dollars? You're not asking them for like $10 or $20 or thousands. These people know that you're really coming to ask for millions, because that's the game that they're in. They're in the big budget game, and you're going up a level. So you have to have your confidence straight, and you have to be able to look these people in the eye, and they have to know that you're serious and ready to play the game that they're playing. And if not, you have to go the other route.
That brings up a really, really good point, because you're essentially trying to break into the film industry, and the film industry is a Jewish male-dominated industry. What challenges have you faced being an African American filmmaker who's seeking distribution?
Yes, sometimes people are not even gonna, won't even they'll accept your movie and they'll give you a good game. Like they have a thing in Santa Monica every year I went to before, and you have to have a packet to give them, and your movie has to be in a packet, and the packet has to be set up a certain way with the poster and a one sheet and other things inside the movie. And sometimes these people act like they really want to work with you, but they're just shelving your stuff. They're not even going to even look at it. So sometimes you have to go to the black people and see if they'll help you. But you never know. It might be a Jewish person or a white person that's into the type of art that you're into. If you're into art that's from the urban community and that's what you're making, then you might want to talk to somebody that's in that type of field. But it is different ways, because we've been shut out this business for so many years. It was like a magic trick to black filmmakers, because years ago we weren't allowed to be able to make movies because we didn't have the funding to be able to make them, because everything costed. Film costed, to rent a camera costed, and everything costed. So the white people would keep us out of the business that way because they knew that they had it on lock and they knew that we couldn't afford it. And they owned all the distribution companies. And in order to get a distribution deal, you'd have to go talk to them. But now, since they're kind of the game, now it's trying to change, and you can make your own stuff and put it out, and you can make distributors come to you. But it's just how you present yourself and how you put it out there. But this is a ruthless game, though, and they will discriminate you. Some people just by the color, or even just by the movie that you make. Some people won't even let you into film festivals just because of the movie you made. Your movie could be good and all of that, but they're still considered as urban or something, and say that they don't want it in there, even though they wanted it. They accept it if it starts taking money. But at the start of it,
I heard you mention Bill Duke. Is that somebody that you want to work with in the industry?
Yes, I definitely would love to work with Bill Duke. I met Bill Duke one time, and we had a few conversations. I met him when I was living in Hollywood. I met Bill Duke at a gas station, matter of fact. He was pumping gas, and just like you asked me, how do you get your money? You have to have the confidence to go ask him. I went up to Bill Duke, and I said, hey, how you doing? I just moved up here from Stockton. I'm a filmmaker, and I want to make movies. Can I make movies for you? How can we get this going? And he was like, yeah, call me. Have you did anything? And I told him that I had made a movie and stuff. But at the time, the movie Gritty, it wasn't all the way finished. It was just a rough cut. So I sent him the rough cut, and he watched the rough cut, and he told me he liked it. But he was moving to Canada for like 5 years back then, and he'll be back. And he's back now. And I recently just sent him over some stuff about a few months ago, and we're going to see what's going to happen with that. But, I just emailed him.
Bill Duke is also in the comic industry too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's come back to you. I want to give Mr. Marcus McDaniel a little chance so that way he can go ahead on and let the audience know about his business. Mr. Marcus, could you please tell the audience a little bit about your business?
Yeah. I'm basically, I cook, I serve, and I do shows. I've done shows. I've also done, wedding parties, wineries. I've catered, and then I've gotten to a restaurant, which is a whole different monster. But I said, really, I cook and I serve people, and I sit back and I watch the party, and that is a little bit more fun to me now than being in the party.
So, what made you go into business for yourself?
I went into business. You said what made me go into business for myself? The absence of jobs. I came home from being incarcerated. What was the year? 2010, beginning of 2010. It was rough. I'll start working for Diamond Walnut. If y'all familiar with Stockton, it's a major employer right there off of Charter and Mariposa, or Dr. Martin Luther King and Mariposa. I was blessed to have that. And that barely got anything going as far as paying the bills and really like taking care. I had kids and everything I had to take care of on a real life basic salary, not even salary, just base pay. So I'm looking around. My brother's in the union, and he's like, he's making good money, and he's working with his hands. He's in the carpenters union, and I'm like, I like building. I could work with my hands, so I get into that, and that's cool. But at the same time, union has certain stipulations where they got to hire people close. That live close to certain sites, and they got to, and they had to hire a certain amount of black folks, certain amount of Hispanics, whatever have you. But I remember it was the bridge they were building right there off of French Camp Road, and they said that the easiest, the most people to get into that, It'll be easier to get into that if you lived close to the site. Mind you, I lived off of Ralph Avenue in Crow Valley, Sharps Lane, whatever you want to call it. That's around the corner. That may be 5 minutes away from where the construction site was. I filled out that work out of work list multiple times, and every time the list would be empty and, oh, well, we're going to start a new list. And I said, okay, it's a lot of nepotism, a lot of brown nosing going on. I was like, I can't get into this either. Okay, cool, I got to figure it out. So I'm going to school because in the union you have to go to school every few months if you're an apprentice until you journey out. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to school, and these guys are coming in there. They're broke up. They got bad knees. They got bad backs. They got stories of divorce and alimony. I mean, they got missing fingers. And then this one teacher was like, look, bro, I'm going to tell you right now. He said, I wanted to be a park ranger like Yogi Bear. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, what? He said, that's what I wanted to do. He said, but I had a child. I got married. And my partner was like, hey, get into this. It's going to pay the bills. It's going to make a nice life for you and whatnot. And he said he did that strictly for survival, which is where I was at. I'm doing something strictly for survival. It was good pay. It was actually interesting work, but like he said, every time you get into a job, you're working yourself out of a job. So I'm like, okay. He said, what I suggest is you go for what you want. So I went for what I wanted. He said, save your money and go for what you want. I saved my money and I went for what I wanted, which
well,
is not having
advice.
Nobody think of it. Yeah.
And then that was great advice because here you are today. And we do know that any successful restaurant, you got to have a good chef, right? You got to have a great location and a great concept. What factors do you contribute to your restaurant success?
Small menu and fresh produce, fresh meat. I'm not in, I really don't want to have something frozen, period. But if I have to, it should not be there that long. The vegetables, I don't cook with a lot of salt just based on the fact that we are prone to high blood pressure and stuff like that. Right now, with the way the world is turning right now, I see a lot of us and a lot of people in general really starting to get woke to the fact that health is wealth, and I totally believe that. You know what I'm saying? So I try not to cook with a lot of salt. I try not to do too much butter, but I love it. I love butter. I think I get that from my dad.
You don't want to have high blood pressure, but you're going to clog up our arteries, huh?
I'm going to die anyway. It's all that.
Okay, I got you.
What I'm trying to get clear is, and I'm quite sure the audience probably trying to get clear too, is what type of business you have? What are you serving the people?
Well, right now, I mean, I basically have two businesses per se right now. I cater. I have a food truck that I serve soup, sandwiches, and salads, and that's fresh off the grill, cooked to order. And then I'm in partnership with two other brothers, and we have a barbecue restaurant. And so we serve in ribs, chicken links, sometimes tri-tip, and, regular sides like mashed potatoes. Baked beans, potato salad, cornbread, I do most of the sides. I try to make sure that everything is done fresh. I don't like, you could taste old food if you don't know it. If you got that look on your face, I'm so involved, it irritates my soul when somebody comes in and they get the screw face and I know what that is. Maybe something has been there too long. Maybe I went to a different vendor to purchase my meat, or a different vendor to purchase. Oh, because during this all, COVID was a monster. I'm talking about. It was a shortage on meat. I said, what happened? There's no pigs nowhere. I can't buy no ribs. I don't know what's going on. The price just skyrocketed out of nowhere. Even the ground beef. It was crazy. It was a battle. It still is right now. But yeah, that's what I do. I cook, I serve people, I try to stay as consistent as possible, but in the current atmosphere we're in right now with this corona virus, it's like hit and miss on everything. I mean, the grocery stores look like I'm in a third world country, and then they're people are scared to come outside, and that's understandable, but then you got people that need to pay bills, so it's a struggle.
So yeah. Are you using family recipes, and if you are, what's your signature dish?
Some family recipes, yes. I am using family recipes. I can't necessarily say I have a signature dish right now. As far as my sandwiches go, my signature dish would be my jambalaya sandwich. I haven't seen it anywhere, but that would be my signature dish. My rubs and my spices that I put on my food is there's no salt, but the way that I got my mix and I got my rub down. I need it patented or something, but I know it's going to be under lock and key somewhere because that's where I get over. If you don't got
yeah,
to, if you're not spicy, huh?
You mentioned jambalaya. You from Louisiana?
No, sir. I'm from right here. I'm from Stockton, California, born and raised.
209.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, because you mentioned jambalaya. You know, I'm from Louisiana, you know, and I know what jambalaya
mm-hmm.
is. That's how I make it.
Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's great. You know, I mean, we need a good barbecue place. Your barbecue place, is it a sit down place?
Yeah, you can come in and sit down. I mean, it was nice, man. Before this virus, before COVID, I mean, we had Fridays was like karaoke. Saturdays, we had live music. Sundays, we had brunch, and they come and watch football. Like last year, the Niner fans swore they were going to win. Unfortunately, they didn't.
Apparently, we don't have any Niner fans on the on this call right now. So, yeah.
Well, let me go ahead on and do this announcement right quick. I want to let the audience know that you're listening at Uplifting Communities Talk Show. Our special guest is Mr. Keith Lee and Mr. Marcus McDaniel. And, and this is a great show. And wanted to let you guys know, if you guys want to ask a question or elaborate on something, please press 1. Okay, and while I'm doing that, I might as well go ahead on and give a shout out to our supporters, and that's Miss Artie from Artie Honey, organic honey at that, and also a couple other people, Mr. Joe Manuel. He's one of our supporters out of Louisiana, and I want to give a shout out to him, and. And I want to definitely give a shout out to Miss Tamaya Gaines. She's the host, and Mr. J Love, and he's a host for Uplifting Communities Talk Show. Okay, back to you, Mr. Maya Gaines.
We appreciate that, Mr. Brown. Okay, so I want to go back to. Actually, I have a question for both Mr. McDaniel and Mr. Lee. Okay, just take a couple seconds and answer the question. And then pass it off to the other person. Where do you both see yourself in 5 years? And if you could work with anybody in your industry, who would it be? So for Mr. Keith Lee, if you can work with anybody, I know you mentioned Bill Duke, but anybody else, if distance was not an issue, who would you want to work with and why? And Mr. McDaniel, if you can cook alongside anybody, who would you want to cook with and why?
Okay. Right now, the person I want to work with most would be Miss Ava DuVernay. She's right now, she made 13th. She made the King movie, Queen Sugar. Right now, she's the person who gives people chance as long as you put in the work. And I would say that the real reason I would want to work with her is because you could tell that she's an honest person, and also that she's really pioneering this whole black filmmaking movement right now, and that's one person you'd like to know and be able to work with in the future. But that's definitely one I'd like to work with. It's for sure Ava DuVernay.
And she also, is that the one who helps out with Power, too? Is she on Power?
No,
she?
It's,
I'm
it's
trying
a,
to picture
it's a,
her.
It's a woman, Ava DuVernay. Her name is Ava.
Okay.
Her name is Ava.
Oh,
she's
responsible for a lot of programs, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Miss Ava DuVernay.
I'm trying to picture her. All right. Yeah, great choice.
Yeah.
Great choice.
And
Daniel?
Where I see myself. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Where
I
see myself in five.
Done.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Just a part about where I see myself in 5 years, and that would be owning my own studio, my own studio like Tyler Perry, but here in outside of Stockton or somewhere in Northern California.
Nice.
All right. Like that.
Thank you. Mr. McDaniel?
Oh, I. Who would I like to work alongside of? I don't know. When I was starting up this, I started with a hot dog cart, and
wow.
I watched a lot of shows, and one of them that struck was Guy Fieri. He was from around town. He was from Northern California, and
mm-hmm.
bought his cookbook. I liked his style. I liked how humble he stayed. I would love to work alongside him. You know what I'm saying? As far as somebody that's like known. Yeah. Besides that, maybe my children, I would love for them to take an interest and take what I'm doing to another level. You know what I'm saying? As far as where I see myself in 5 years, man, hopefully, I mean, I don't need nothing real big. I would like to have just a successful, nice place where you could come and get some really good food and some really, really good music. Somewhere where you could – I want this to be somewhere where somebody would take their significant other for a date, for like an anniversary, where somebody could go and probably get engaged.
Wow.
Like a perfect $20 date.
Exactly.
Yeah. that sounds like your book to me.
Oh, gosh, I had to throw that in there since he mentioned
that.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
I got a question for Mr. Keith Lee.
Yes.
Brother Lee, your motivation behind your movie and the title called America Can. What's your motivation behind that title specifically?
Right now we're dealing with a lot of things that's racially motivated, and the KKK really stands for like the system that everybody is going through, because it's bigger than the KKK. It's like it's big. It has to do with the government and everything that they don't want us to have and put us through trickle down to us, like the government brung in crack. We don't own any gun shops. We don't make any guns, but yet we get the most time in jail for that. I mean, I've been locked up for guns, and at the time I was locked up, they were misdemeanors, and now they changed them to felonies to keep people locked up even longer. I've been locked up a few times here in Stockton and in San Francisco, and every time it seems like it's an unfair justice for us. And I want to show that how these people are going through these situations that they're going through, but it's a backstory to why they're going through this. Why are kids carrying guns? I mean, some people's parents have been incarcerated. Some kids don't have any other way to protect themselves, and they feel that's the way they protect themselves because we don't have anything else going on in the community. But and that's from them not giving us funding to community. So through this series, I'm trying to bring that back and show everything and pull the curtain up on the United States and show why that they're not giving us stuff. But when you watch it, it seems like everything is always our fault. We're the ones that's causing all of the trouble. But there's really behind us that's put all of us in a position to have to fend for ourselves right now. And a lot of people are fending for themselves by any means necessary. And it's not right that they're doing it, but a lot of people feel that they're in a corner.
But it definitely is a corner that we're in. I felt it gets cold and hard and frustrating. And you figure out, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And then, like, okay, I was put in a position where and I had this hot dog cart. I want to sell hot dogs. And I got to procure a business, no, a vendor's permit. So you have to go through the the police department to get the fingerprints, to get this vendor's permit. He said Stockton, California has a blanket denial policy. If anybody has a record, they're going to automatically be denied a permit. And I said, what is that about? For what? Oh, well, we just want to make sure that if you're out there, I said, what, selling hot dogs, something bad doesn't happen? Oh, yeah, you could do this, and you could do this, and you could do that. The man told me, go have your baby mama come in here and get it. I said, wow, that's how you talk to me.
Wow.
And I said,
what?
Yeah,
they're telling you it's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yeah.
You know,
go have your baby mama do it. He's just playing,
right,
toying with
you.
But
you know one thing? Wow. That is, you know.
This is Blake.
That's, cool
that's how they keep you out.
That's how they keep you out.
Well,
yeah.
Well, you guys, we got some people that want to either ask you a question or elaborate on something. We only got 19 minutes left on the show, so let's start letting these people in, okay? Caller, state your name and where you're calling from. Caller from 7138. State your name and where you're calling from. Okay, let me get another one. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, good evening, everyone on the show. Yes, good evening, everybody from the show. This is Cedric Thomas from the Emeryville, Oakland area with the partnership with Miss Artie and the honey business. How is everybody this evening?
All right.
Fine. You're good.
Right. How you doing?
I'm blessed, and everyone, I hope so as well. I'd like to direct my question to Mr. Marcus regarding all his culinary skills. Mr. Marcus, at one time, I was a culinary cooking assistant at a culinary school here in the Berkeley area, and I heard you mention that you'd like to see your children get possibly involved and grow and take establishment in the cooking industry as well. I want to recommend one of the finer institutes you do have here in the state of California, which is called the Greystone Cooking Institute in Napa Valley in St. Helena. Awesome cooking school. Check them out to do there. Second question or comment. In all of your cooking and your fine ingredients that you do, you ever incorporate honey at any time?
All the time. Yes, sir.
Okay, well, just to let you know, secondary to that question, if you ever need some organic purchasing, I can be more than happy to help you out on that.
Okay, that's right.
Also, last question, I'll let everybody go. How are you? Are you more into the soul food, or you go more American, Mexican, Chinese style of your cooking, or are you just straight state barbecue?
I don't even really know. I mean, they said Stockton, California is one of the most diverse cities in the nation, and I've had a little bit of everything. So I like food. I mean, I like the heat and pepper of Asian, Southeast Asian and Mexican food. I like the flavor and the soul food. I don't know. I mean, being that I'm a black man in America, I lean more towards soul food, but I mean, I love Mexican food. I'm from Stockton. I love Mexican food too. I don't know. I just like playing with it. They said it's the original alchemy. I like playing with food.
If you ever incorporated collard greens and mustard greens into any of your side dishes, I'll let you know. I am a local producer of that as well. So
that's what's up.
Just FYI, all organic.
Yeah. That's what I was talking about earlier. I want to get more into that.
Mr. Marcus McDaniel is going to leave his information, okay, at the end of the show, so you guys can talk about that. Give him a call, and you guys can talk about that. So we would like to continue on with the show. Okay, sorry about that, you guys, but we have to do it like that. Okay. Okay, go ahead on, Mr. Maya.
Oh, I just wanted to read something here. Are you guys familiar with The New Jim Crow? It's a book by, I believe it's Michelle Alexander.
Yes.
Mm.
Was that you, Mr. Lee?
That was me.
No, that wasn't me.
That was Marcus. That was me.
Oh, Mr. McDaniel, I should know your voice. I'm sorry. Michelle Alexander, 2 years after the Obama administration, she actually condemned the criminal justice system. She put the whole criminal justice system on trial. And this is what she had to say about the criminal justice system. She says, once you're labeled a felon, the old forms of discrimination, employment discrimination, housing discrimination, denial of right to vote, denial of educational opportunity, denial of food stamps and other public benefits, and exclusion from jury service are suddenly legal. As a criminal, you have scarcely more rights and largely less respect than a black man living in Alabama at the height of Jim Crow. We have not ended racial caste in America. We merely redesigned it. What has your experience been, Mr. McDaniel and Mr. Lee?
That's absolutely correct. That is the truth. You said when you started about the Dred Scott case in 1967, how they abolished slavery with the 13th Amendment, but at the same time, they made sure that you understood that if you commit a crime, all your rights will be stripped from you. So they made sure black men, brown men, yellow men, mainly black men are represented in the criminal justice system. They make sure that you get stuck with that F fast, and from there, you are counted out. You can't compete like anybody else. You cannot get in certain industries. You cannot get in certain neighborhoods. You cannot get certain jobs. You're counted out. Now you're for sure in the permanent underclass. This is not an accident.
Right.
This is by design.
Right, right. And Mr. Lee, have you experienced something similar to that, or what has your experience been? Because you're in a different arena, right?
Yeah, I am, but I have a lot of friends that have been through different situations and like that. Like the three-strike law, they have that set up just to have people locked up. I mean, they're giving out more time, more football numbers for same crimes that they give the white people, but they're getting less time. The system isn't fair and set up for us to win at all. I had a friend who, each time he had a gun case that they gave, they propositioned him either like you take these either 5 years or you could take this strike. You already have two felonies, or you have one felony, but we'll give you a strike. And a lot of people are taking these strikes just so they can get out of jail, and that's giving you two strikes. And if you
mm-hmm.
cop with that third strike, you're gone.
Right.
Right. That was a big problem with that. Especially back in the 90s, late 80s and 90s. Big problem
with that. Hold on. Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Brown, Mr. Lee, they making deals now between strikes and years?
Yes.
They've been.
Yes.
Wow.
You have, like,
I didn't know that.
They've done
what
they're going
through. Mm-hmm.
And I think
a lot of time back in the 80s when the drug war was going on, especially in Oakland, they'll stop one of them young brothers and with some weed there because they would be selling weed. They say, "Well, go ahead on and plead guilty, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get 2 months and then you'll be out." But they wasn't knowing that stuff was going on in their record.
Yeah.
Right.
Set you up.
Right. And black men account for roughly about 6.5% of the U.S. population. But it's funny that black men make up over 40% of the prison population, right? So I agree with whoever made the comment that this is not by accident. I do agree that it's by design, right? And if we follow the history of the United States or the black man in the United States, we can see the system was not designed for us, right? The laws were not put in place for us. So
no.
I say this, and this is why this was so important to me, because we hear people say Black Lives Matter, But for me, Black Lives Matter well before somebody gets shot in the street. Here we have an independent filmmaker, and we have a self-employed business owner who could use the help of our community. If you go there and spend $10, it may not make a huge difference to you. Yeah, you can get a cheaper meal at McDonald's for probably $7 or $8. But if you go and spend $10 or spend any money with these businesses, that dollar stretches much further in our community than it does with the larger corporation. So I just want everybody to keep that in mind, okay? Do your part to support a Black-owned business. And Mr. Lee, I don't know if this is permissible in your industry, but have you considered a Kickstarter campaign to fund your next film project, or what are your thoughts? I mean, what are the different ways you've come up with to raise money?
Yeah, I did a crowdfunding before. It didn't turn out too successfully for me. That's why I went out and just put up my own money, bought my own camera and everything else, because you have to learn how to run a crowdfunding campaign too. And it's, I'm not going to say it's a lot that goes into it, but you really have to know what you're doing on there too to reach all these different people. But it does work. I'm not going to say that it doesn't work, because it does work. But the position that I'm in, I just went out and bought my own camera, my own equipment, and now I'm running my own company and making my own movies. Because I had, when you're doing that, you have to wait like 2 or 3 months. And sometimes it's kind of like it plays on your heart and because you're hoping that people are going to put this money in. If everybody doesn't, then you still have to keep going, even if it doesn't happen. But it's definitely an opportunity for everybody to try that. That's definitely, everybody's success story is different.
Okay, everybody, we got someone else trying to get in. Okay, want to ask a question or either elaborate on something. We only got 8 minutes left on the show, so let's let them in. Okay, they've been waiting for a while. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Artie calling in. And this question, more so of a remark, is for Keith Lee. Keith, we are listening to you. You're saying you're in the film industry. You're based out of Stockton, California. Last night, we all watched Ice Cube explain himself politically in regards to the film and movie industry. I think this would be an awesome time maybe for you to reach out to Mr. Ice Cube, because his point was he got a lot of criticism because the media put him on blast saying, oh, you're a part of Donald Trump's campaign now. What are you doing, Ice Cube? We've supported you throughout your whole rap career and movie career. What are you doing? And they really didn't give Mr. Ice Cube a chance to explain himself.
Right.
And in a nutshell, after everybody was criticizing him and what the heck are you doing with Donald Trump and all that, as he began to explain, he's willing to speak to Donald Trump. He's willing to have a conversation with Joe Biden, whoever wins, because the point is the lack of revenue for Black filmmakers and directors.
Right.
And this is where I'm going with this right now. So I just want to encourage you to possibly reach out to Mr. Ice Cube. And he's saying he's dealing with all these Black political organizations and leaders. And they're saying, hey, if you guys don't want us to use your platforms, to heck with it. We're going to create our own. Okay?
And
Mr. Ice Cube is saying to everybody, hey, you guys, please don't judge me, because I'm interested. I have to have a conversation with Donald Trump. I have to have a conversation with Joe Biden, whoever's going to be our future president, how we're going to come up with maybe some reparations and some film industry movies and get those percentages up in government contracts.
Well,
Thank you so much.
So I would just, to Keith Lee, I would like to see you reach out to Mr. Ice Cube. This is an interesting season, you guys. And then I would
also like to say
to Marcus, keep doing what you're doing. I'm so impressed by you because you're great. You started off with a hot dog stand, and for you to be at the level of business that you're at with the concept of having a place where people can go and say, hey, I want to take my future husband or fiance there and just really capitalize on that and be blessed. I'm proud of you, Marcus. That's a beautiful thing. But between Marcus and Keith, you get with Ice Cube.
Thank you.
And Marcus, you need to give everybody your website so we can order our lunch from you.
Thank you.
And that's all I wanted to say.
Appreciate the kind words. Thank you. Appreciate the kind
words.
Yeah,
and Marcus, when you give your information, please let the audience know if you have a takeout service also for your restaurant.
Yeah,
we'll do.
Well, why don't we go ahead and do that now? Marcus, why don't you tell the Uplifting Communities talk show audience where they can find you?
You can find me and my partners. We are at 2210 Country Club Boulevard, Stockton, California, 95204. The number to the restaurant is 209-292-8139. The number for the catering truck, Mudville Mix, is 657-229-4627.
And do you guys have a Facebook page?
Yeah, we have Facebook and Instagram, Center Stage Barbecue on Instagram, and Center Stage on Facebook. And Center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E on Facebook.
And if you want to give a quick shout out to your partner.
Repeat the address and the telephone numbers on both. Okay, because I didn't get that, and I want to make sure that I put that when I do the advertisement after the show.
The address is 2210 Country Club Boulevard, Center Stage Barbecue. The phone number is 292-8139. For the catering truck, Mudville Mix, the phone number is 657-229-4627.
4627.
All right.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
And do you want to give your partners a quick shout out?
Yeah, man. These brothers held me down. It's lovely to find partners. I mean, we bump heads because when you're in a stressful situation, sometimes things get hot, but we done kept it real with each other. My partner, Lamar Smith, and Kenny Guyton, we're not backdooring each other and doing all that weird stuff. We actually pooling our funds, pulling our resources to make something better and bigger. And it's hard to do that. And I see it's hard for Black people to do that with each other. We see people in the Spanish community, the Asian community, they pool their funds all the time and they get further faster. When we learn to do that, I believe that we'll get there too.
Okay.
Very good.
All right. Now
thank
we need
you
to get Mr. Keith information. Because we only got a minute and 56 seconds left on the show. Mr. Keith, please.
Mr.
Give
Lee,
us your...
where can we find you? Mr. Lee?
Hello? Okay. You can
Mr. Lee?
At Keith Lee Movies. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I can hear you now.
Yeah.
Okay, take this up for me there. It's all right. We live. Okay, you can reach me at Keith Lee Movies, and that's Lee, L-E-A, on Twitter, and you can reach me under Keith Lee Movies on Instagram, and you can reach me under Keith Lee Movies on Facebook. And I guess that's, well, if you want to watch one of the movies, you could reach the latest movie to the first episode of the West Coast American Dream. You could go to Amazon.com and look up the first series, and... yeah, that's how you can see what I'm working on, our latest project, the first episode.
All right. Okay, well, you know, I really want to appreciate you guys coming on. And I'm going to go ahead on and I'm going to pass it out to pass it over to Mr. Myers to close this out.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
I told you last week I don't know how to close out no show. Jamar, go ahead.
Well, you're going to close this show out. Go ahead on, J-Love.
Well,
close it out.
Again, Mr. McDaniel, Mr. Brother Keith Lee, I want to first wish you all the best in your future. You
Thank
both
you.
Have great futures to come in, and I pray that everything continues to blossom for your life. I want to thank Mr. John L. Brown. I want to thank Tamaya Gaines and all the beautiful audience who joined us tonight. We are so happy to have you, and please join us again next time. We're so excited to bring you more content about very special people in the community. And from all of that, all that's left to say is thank you so much, and good night to all. Thank you.
All right. Good night,
thank
everybody.
You.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you. Bye, Tamaya Gaines. Thank you.